they're kind of a, she's about 40 pounds, but she's very compact.
Good afternoon. We'll open up a public hearing. I'm sorry, the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness today. Appreciate all in attendance. Today is February 21st. Our intent is to move a couple bills in the work session, but prior to having the work sessions on House Bill 2417 and House Bill 2421, we'll be going into a public hearing. So the first up on the public hearing, we'll open up a public hearing, House Bill 2086. Ms. Edwards?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2086 establishes one or more veteran-themed lottery games dedicated to veterans' education and economic development. It creates a veterans' lottery fund that's separate and distinct from the general fund. It would appropriate money from the veterans' lottery fund to the Department of Veteran Affairs continuously. It instructs the Oregon State Lottery Commission to record and account for the costs and the net proceeds of the veteran-themed lottery games and requires that commission to certify the net proceeds of veteran-themed lottery games to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. It then directs DAS to allocate an amount equal to the net proceeds from the veteran-themed lottery game to the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund to the Veterans Lottery Fund. The veteran-themed lottery game will begin January 2nd, 2015.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. I appreciate that. And we'll call first to the dais, if we could, Cameron Smith and Paul Evans, if you will. And this is a team to be reckoned with for our veterans. And I appreciate you both being here. And also thank you, Paul Evans, for the books. We have Veteran Speak, written by you. And for those in the audience, called Veteran Speak, Introduction to the Language of Veterans, written by Paul Evans. And through Veteran Speak, Air Force veteran Paul Evans explores the history of reintegration of our nation's heroes. This thoughtful book gives insight to potential employers and everyday citizens into the training and psyche of today's military personnel. Appreciate the book. Thanks very much for the gift of the committee. And thanks for being here today. You're welcome to get started. Introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Matthews, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cameron Smith, policy advisor for Governor Kitzhaber on military veterans and emergency management. This bill on the veterans lottery concept came up last session and I think has come up from long brainstorms even before in terms of some of the task force work that Paul helped lead. Great strengths and great weaknesses in terms of how we fund government with our lottery dollars. You know, Governor Kitzhaber even has, you know, has a lot of reservations about how heavily dependent we are upon the lottery. But has been supportive of this small and targeted approach. Right now, nothing prevents lottery from doing a veterans-themed ticket or a veterans-themed raffle, just like we do in terms of when U of O plays Oregon State for the Civil War and some of our other marketing initiatives. What is needed, though, is a mechanism that if we're going to use that hook of veterans on a scratch-it ticket or on a raffle game, that we would have a mechanism where those funds would come into the veterans community. So it's not looking at any constitutional change. It would still meet the sniff test of education and economic development, but it would be for this targeted population of our veterans. And why I think it's a real positive, whether you know, lottery is not always the best investment for your own dollars, you know, whether or not it's entertainment or not, there is a war bond type dynamic around our veterans that I think, you know, I don't play the lottery personally, but I know I'd be buying 10 raffle tickets or 10 scratch-its through the Oregon Lottery, knowing that most of those proceeds are going to get driven back into veterans education and veterans economic development, veterans employment. And it's a way to raise awareness, you know, right now Washington State has just done it for their Veterans Innovations Program. They start on November 11th, run their raffle through the end of the year, and it just raises awareness for what our veterans and our military families are facing. Hard to say, I think, I don't know if there's been any estimates in terms of how much we would raise, but other states that have gone this route in terms of a limited, you know, it's an existing game and we're using that veterans design and marketing over it. Washington, Illinois, West Virginia, I think we can expect to raise $500,000 to $1 million to drive into this area for good work. And every little bit counts, knowing what we're going to face in terms of federal sequestration at the national level. And we just, the needs will not go away. We are preaching to the choir of this committee in terms of what our veterans and military families face. And this is a small way for Oregonians to give back. So very supportive, and thank you for listening, and happy to take any questions, maybe after Paul's pitch.
Thank you.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Evans. I live at 744 Main Street East, Monmouth, Oregon, the great metropolis. And I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to be here. First of all, it's just good to see Representative Matthews where you're at. I've been watching from afar, watching from the classroom, how this committee's already been doing a lot of good work in the short time you've had. As far as the book goes, it's really more of a background for a number of the issues that I'm hoping to talk about today and at some other times in the future. The bottom line is that there is a situation coming that we really in Oregon have been working on for some time. As you know, you've been up to your elbows in making those things happen. But at the end of the day, words and programs and good thoughts can only go so far. You need money to do things. And the bottom line is that I can't look into a crystal ball and tell you what's going to happen with sequestration or federal funds. What I can tell you is, as a teacher who has taught veterans history for the last 5 years, I can tell you that every time there's been a major buildup in the military and there's a major war, that at the end of that war, people's attitudes change and the veterans programming and the dollars associated therein go away every time. And this particular war has been fought differently than every war before it in terms of how we both have factored out a lot of the jobs and skills that we used to put in the military. We've contracted those out, so now we're training perfect, wonderfully ready to go anywhere in the world killers, but we're not training cooks, we're not training drivers, we're not training a lot of things we used to train for the workforce, which is going to make reintegration more difficult. We're also, because we've fought this war with the same group of guys, he's done three, I did three, the average I think now is four or five, the kids coming back, you got about 18 to 24 months to get them on the right track going up, or they're going to go on the wrong track going down, and we're either going to pay now a little bit, or we're going to pay a whole lot more over time. It's just the fact of the matter. And you guys have been great, you guys and gals have been great advocates and ambassadors. But we need this bill to pass. In fact, we probably need more than this bill to pass. But it's a good symbolic start. And the fact of the matter is, right now in Congress, it is a polar opposite of what is going on here in Oregon. Back there, R's and D's can't decide on what day it is. From the beginning of the task force, from the beginning of the work of the last 5 years, it has been an R&D process through and through. This issue in Oregon is not partisan. It's the right thing to do. And I understand, last time we were here, in fact, during the the little mini session that we had, we talked about this very issue. And when it comes to lottery dollars, I know there's some legitimate concerns about, A, it potentially drying up, and, B, you being responsible for theoretically making an addiction worse. I get those things. But when you're up to your behind in alligators, you need to remember you went to the swamp to drain it. We can't let the little things get in the way. We need the cash to get the programs in place, or we will be looking back wishing we had. Again, I appreciate everything you have done so far. I could not talk about this in stronger possible terms in terms of being in favor of it. I think it's a great first step. And ultimately, the programs that we're going to come back and talk about in a little bit are directly related to the ability to have a foundation of sustainable, reliable funds for veterans program. So thank you very much. And if you have any questions, I'd love to try to answer them.
Thanks so much for your testimony, both of you, and thanks for being here. The committee does have some questions. Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree on going across the street. I just disagree with the way we're getting across the street. I think we should put this out on the ballot and let the people decide whether we should allocate 1% of the lottery funds toward our veterans on an ongoing basis forever, because what this thing, I look at this and I think it's an up and a down deal, because when the war is all over, it's going to drop off. And where if we allocated a certain percentage, and I know the people of Oregon would do this, I just know they would, then it would continue to go on forever, perpetually.
If you want to respond to that, absolutely.
Chair Matthews, Representative Esquire, I think you're right. I mean, I absolutely agree that it's a cyclical nature. The fundamental, there's two fundamental truths having to do with the way we fought this war that is really a model for the future. And before I get to that, I would absolutely agree with you if you want to go 1 or even 2% of the lottery, which I know is not the purpose of this bill, and I don't want to put any agencies at risk, but I'm a private citizen, so I'll say it out loud. 2 to 5% is fine with me, because ultimately it will help us reach out to that $4 billion that's currently waiting because of the 280,000 veterans we haven't gotten involved in the system, not just from this war, but from wars going back. Now, back to the way we fought this war. We have fundamentally changed the way in which we go to war. We will never have a conscription or a draft again, period. Won't happen. We will never, ever have a situation where we have, because of our budgetary constraints, we will never have the size of military that we used to have. We have now made a decision, largely, I think, not to our benefit, but we've made a decision to put even more money into technology for unmanned aircraft, unmanned ships, unmanned weaponry. So what we can predict down the future is there's going to be a mainlining, or at least a relative fixed number of troops that we're going to have over time. The problem is, and this is why I think that access to a sustainable funding is important, whereas we used to have a tooth-to-tail ratio of 10 to 1, 9 to 1 of supporters to trigger pullers like we did in previous wars, we've gotten it now down to 3 or 4 to 1, which means we're contracting out everything that isn't combat-related, and in fact, in some cases, in illegal ways, we are in fact contracting out combat services. So the fact of the matter is that we're going to have troops that go in largely. It's going to be a static size force, but when the guys and gals get out, they're going to be coming from a very, very military environment to a non-military environment. They're still going to need those reintegration services. They're still going to need access to housing. They're still going to need access to what will probably be an even more remote system of VA, as you alluded to, because the World War II generation, as they start to pass off, VA has been making investments in a lot more remote-type servicing. Those require dollars and infrastructure because, as you know, the state of Oregon doesn't have a large veterans complex or a large military complex upon which to draw. So 2% over time, 1%, these funds, as long as the monies are available, once they're no longer needed and there's no more wars, I would be happy to help undo this particular law. But I think there's going to be a lot of need over the next 20, 40, or 60 years.
And I think not necessarily a tension between one targeted scratch it initiative or a raffle initiative, and if it got subsumed into a larger percentage allocation, whether out of the legislature or a vote of the people, it would just get subsumed into that larger effort. So not necessarily at tension.
Thank you for your point, Representative. Representative Fagan.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing? So I definitely agree that we need a source of stable funding. I personally have just a lot of trouble with the lottery, kind of an expansion of the lottery being the way that we go about that. In fact, just this week, the stats came out for kind of your typical lottery player, and it's a woman about age 47 who makes under $35,000 a year, and I'm uncomfortable with the prospect of trying to raise more funds when that's kind of the person that we're raising it from. I wish instead that we were, because as you are aware, you can pretty much justify anything as long as you're doing it for veterans, because people love veterans. You guys have considerable political capital, and I wish that we were here on something that maybe, you know, would be hard for people to support, if it's a tax or a fee or a fund from somebody who can afford it, as opposed to this 47-year-old woman who makes $35,000 a year. So I very much support finding. That's why I was happy to support kind of a $5 per document fee for the homeless veteran services, and that's a fee that would not get unanimous support if it was not for veterans. You have a significant political capital, and I'd love to see us try and find a stable fund somewhere else as opposed to expanding the Oregon lottery, because the people that are playing, the average person, really can't afford to be playing.
Chair Matthews, Representative Fagan. First of all, I would love to be here having other options than the lottery. When I was senior policy advisor, I fought and lost multiple times for general fund. I fought and lost for fee-based approaches, fought and lost for every other thing, and was told we had to go find somewhere that wasn't general fund and wasn't, I mean, quite frankly, was lottery and everything else but name. Having said that, I am absolutely for some solutions that probably wouldn't have bipartisan support. I'm for putting every family that didn't have family members in the military for for a war tax and actually paying for the war that we didn't pay and we put on a credit card. I'm for actually
that'll be popular, Paul.
Reallocating.
Careful what doors you open.
I'm actually for reallocating and having a legal definition of what economic development is, because for every dollar that we put into veterans, we can get about $1,017 back. So we can actually argue it that way, that lottery aside, other economic development funds could be open to it. If you want a square, we'll build you a square. You want a triangle, we'll build a triangle. You want a circle, we'll build a circle. But the bottom line is, we've got kids coming back that have not the same type of opportunities they had before because of the way we've chosen to fight this war. They've been in the crucible longer, for more often. We are already seeing suicides at 22 veterans a day, and I've been beating the drum for a couple of years. This is the tsunami we've been talking about, and the window is closing. So I'm open to anything up to and probably beyond what you would probably be comfortable with. But we have to act now, because we do not have the luxury of time. We've run the clock out. And the kids, sequestration, for just an example, we will be having 40 to 60,000 troops coming off active duty far faster than people thought. The system isn't ready. On top of the 300 to 400 a month in Oregon that we were having just as through normal attrition. And these guys and gals need the kinds of help that we didn't really need to provide a decade and a half ago. So I like what you're thinking, and just tell us what you want us to do.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments and your passion on the issues. I really do. Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I don't understand this, but I think I do. We aren't expanding the lottery. We're just taking proceeds from the lottery. Example, the thing that I just said, maybe 1 or 2%, or you'd like to have 10%, I know, but...
Yes, that's a good start.
Realistically, Paul, it would not have anything to do with the expansion of any program. It would be the net proceeds to be divvied up to us, and I think that's the ticket.
So, Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel, last session when this came first forward, it got tied up in some of the marketing that the lottery had been doing around the Orcade and whether they were marketing to youth, and whether are we targeting marketing and whether this was an expansion. It was written pretty broadly. For the bill before us today, I don't think you can classify it as an expansion of lottery. Instead of an existing scratch-it or raffle, this one would be run instead on an existing game, not a new game in terms of format or structure. Whereas the larger effort that I think you're talking about in terms of a percentage would just be, here's what lottery collects through all of their initiatives, and then a slice of that pie comes out.
Thank you for that. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just from my experience, I've been doing this for a long time too, and known Paul to be here for a long time. But in 2001, I believe it is, nobody's counted me yet, the voters of Oregon voted to bond to the tune of $2.1 billion to seismically upgrade our public buildings. We still have not done that, so we do have a bill in this time to try to address that. But my point is that I think there's nothing wrong with going to a vote of the people, but I don't think you could, it takes a long time to get it on the ballot. And like you said, there's not a lot of time. About an hour ago, there were, I don't know how many, but it looked like about 40 or 50 troops, mobilization ceremony up in the Senate of people going off to Afghanistan and Kosovo now. I think they're a medical team. And they're going to be gone for 9 months. So in 9 months, they could be doing this, but I think it would take longer than 9 months to get something like this on the ballot, and then it has to go forward a bit. But anyway, I see this as, we've been working on this for a long time, and Paul's absolutely right. You were told, come back with other options. You know, I know what it's like to get money, or try to, I know what it's like to try to get money out of the Ways and Means process. So sometimes you get lucky. But I think that this is a kind of an opportunity for us. And I know we were talking about gray whale license plates today. I mean, not every one of you would buy a gray whale license plate. Some will buy other license plates or just take what they give you. But people who are interested in it will do it. I don't win the lottery, so but it's because I probably don't buy any tickets. But I would buy these tickets. And and even if I won, I would give it to you guys. So I think that's just my two cents. I think that's a sense of urgency, and I'm ready to vote.
Thank you. And we are in a public hearing. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cameron, Paul pointed out that we've discussed this in years and hearings past, and I've always liked to believe, and I don't know the psyche of the lottery ticket buyer, but, you know, I would like to think that, like Cameron said, maybe he doesn't buy them now, but for this, he may put $10 down and buy a scratch it or something like that. So I support both concepts. I support this concept, and to Representative Escoval, there actually is a bill out there, and I don't know if I want to speak for Representative Parrish, but I've signed on to a bill that does, and I think it's 5% of the lottery that it would set aside, and so I've signed on. I support that, and that would send the question to the voters. And Representative Boone's right. You know, it takes longer than it'd be nice to have, but as a disabled veteran, I know that 9 months from now, 9 years from now, I'm going to, hopefully I'm here. Mitch is going to help me, and Tom, hopefully, there will be some resources. As I get older, my needs are going to get greater. And so I don't think it's something that we have to look at. We need the money. I mean, Paul's been working on this a long time. Cameron's been, a lot of us have been working on it a long time. As long as we keep working on it, 20 years from now, we're going to have a lot of veterans that still have a lot of needs.
Good. And what I would say is you're exactly right. There are two bills out there. Representative Parrish has a bill. There's 41 signatures from the House that I believe are on that bill. I don't know where that bill's been assigned yet. I don't believe it has. I'll be meeting with the Speaker today. And it does request a vote of the people to determine whether or not 5% of the lottery draws. And I can tell you, I think there's going to be some challenges with that, although I'm supportive. And I think the challenge is the bar is pretty high in competition with everything else. But the reality is this particular bill is about a scratch-it game that has a military theme that goes specifically for a cause. And it is not competing against the other games. It's simply not in addition to the games currently, but it's just one of the two tickets or, you know, seven tickets in the case. And I do think that folks would like to support the military. And for me personally, if these are entertainment dollars with respect to the 47-year-old single mother, I don't know how we've determined if that's the video poker player or if that's the lottery scratch-it player. And I think there's probably a difference in the demographics. But we'll hear some from the Lottery Commission. I do appreciate your time today, and I hope you both stick around. I know you have vested interest in the next bill as well, which is the Campus Veteran Service Officers, and we plan on moving a couple things that you're interested in and working hard on. So thanks again. Great to see you, Paul, and thanks for being here, and appreciate your testimony. Thank you. And with that, I will call up Jody Weiser, please.
For the record, I'm Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon. I think your discussion actually covered almost all the points except one in what I had written, because the goal is laudable, but the mechanism isn't, and it's really just taking a piece of the lottery. Hopefully it's not going to get more people addicted to the lottery, and I think that's the fear, that earmarking it. And if you play this, we'll get some people who are actually quite vulnerable coming back from places. They're in a vulnerable place. We don't really want to encourage them to play the lottery and become addicted to the lottery. And I think it's a vulnerable time to do that. And so I was thinking I would be much more comfortable just saying, let's take a piece of the lottery. And then I hear you have a bill like that. But another idea I had was, why don't we do something that's totally unrelated to... I mean, there's no way to find an item that's related aside from those of us who haven't sent a family member away, which is really a very logical thing to do, to say that we should be paying something. But, you know, we have Christmas trees. We sell them all over the place. What if we put a dollar charge on every Christmas tree? That would be a pile of money, and it would be dispersed across a broad segment of the population in the country, and we send Christmas trees to all those places. And it's not related, but neither is the lottery. And so it just seemed like a simpler way to do it that doesn't feel addictive. That's it. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you for your time today. And we'll bring up next Larry Niswender, please, from the lottery. And thank you very much for being here, sir. We've seen you before on this particular issue, and yes, always appreciate your insight.
You're welcome. Thank you, Chair Matthews and committee members. For the record, Larry Nicewinder, director of the Oregon Lottery. I will keep my testimony very brief today because we have had this discussion one other time in the short session, as Paul mentioned. This is, lottery is officially neutral on this bill. That's just the charge that we walk in into these arenas with, but it is a very worthwhile proposal, as you've already heard testimony to support. All I'm really here to do is just give you some background policy considerations and then answer any questions you may have. In their testimony, there's just a couple things that, you know, just so realistic expectations are set. The success of various games, whether they're scratch-its or raffles, it does vary. And some of the veteran-themed games that have been played in other states do vary. And it's not saying they wouldn't be successful in Oregon. If you pass this bill and the lottery is called to do this, we will do our best to make it as successful as possible to drive the revenue you're expecting. It's just that some of the research we've done shows that the success does vary depending on the state and the methodology. To date, we have had, I think, 10 different raffles, and all of them have sold out. And so you will see in my testimony that those do derive approximately $1.2 million per raffle ticket. So we've had really good success with that. Some states do not have success with raffles, and they've discontinued them when they find that they don't continue to sell out. We're on a track where we've got two a year. We would pick one of those two if you pass this, or some scratch-it-themed game, and we would sell them. So to Representative Esquivel's earlier comments, he's correct. It wouldn't call for expansion of gaming. We would take from our existing portfolio of games, and we would dedicate the proceeds from one of those games, the net proceeds, to the fund source. So that being clear, it's just, you know, a little bit of uncertainty around the net proceeds that would be derived, and I know that the policy makers and the program folks would be hoping to have some stability in that, and to our best of our ability, we would try to provide that. In terms of a policy question before you, is the clearer you can be in the record and in this bill, if it passes out, what criteria you would apply to dedicating revenue to a source, in this case, the veterans' education, job development, and training. It helps because in other states where they've had a good cause singled out to dedicate revenues for, then there's always a follow-on of, well, what other good cause do we want to continue to make this slice to? And currently, lottery doesn't have any games that we offer that have dedicated funding recipients. We transfer those proceeds on a quarterly basis. They get transferred through the constitutional provisions, the statutory provisions, and then the legislature in ways and means determines the rest with the governor's support. So that's how it happens today. So that's just a policy issue. The clearer you can be about the criteria you would apply would help avoid some of the issues that other states have experienced where one time this happens, and the next time there's another good cause that it comes to, and then you have the where you draw the line. Just a policy consideration for you to think about. So with that, to just follow on to some of the comments earlier made, just to inform the committee, 1% dedication of lottery proceeds is $10 million a year.
Right.
$10 million to biennium, excuse me, because that's what we provide right now to the problem gambling treatment fund, and it's approximately $10 million per biennium. With that, I will conclude. There's testimony toward the back of my comments that really is just giving you kind of just an little insight in terms of what might be have to be referenced in ways and means where they take up, how does this play through in the budget world? But I really don't think it's necessary to talk about them here today unless you wish to have me do so.
No, I don't think that's necessary today, but thank you so much for your testimony and coming to the committee again and your approach to this. As you know, I mean, I believe you're spot on in terms of what we would say on the record to assist us in what our true intent would be in this bill. And you'll notice it's just in public hearing today because there are some things we need to work out in massaging through this process. So with that, Vice Chair Fagan.
So does the lottery have stats that there's a dramatically different person or income that plays scratch-its versus video poker or video games?
Chair Matthews and Representative Fagan, not that I am aware of. What I've shared with the committee and what's in our tracking studies does give an overall profile that fits exactly what you described. 51% are women, 49% men, average income $35,000 a year with some college. That's kind of a general statement about the player profile. I don't have a delineation, but if we have one, I'll get it to the committee.
A And so an additional question, in this bill, it's saying to establish a game. Is there a difference? I've never read the statutes that authorize video machines, but is there a distinction between a lottery game and, say, video poker, or are those all considered games?
We don't really have any, this statute, I didn't really look at it that closely, but it really talked about, I believe, just traditional games versus video, and there, I think there's separate laws that deal with video games. So, but if the committee wished to change that or be clear about that, in the video world, it's we have, as you know, up to 6 terminals in locations, and they have, based on the software needs, up to maybe 12 games per terminal. And so it would be a little harder right now under our current technology to actually isolate some of the per-game net proceeds, but if that was the wish of the committee, that could be explored.
Sure.
I think the reason I was asking was because all that's been talked about is kind of a, you know, harmless scratch it, but I didn't know if under the statute as written, somebody could have a video machine that's a game that's military themed that falls under this, because everyone keeps talking about a scratch it ticket.
Yeah.
But as it's written, it just says, shall establish one or more lottery games. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's, it talks about either themed lottery or different themed games or other games. It seems generic to me as well, so I guess it wouldn't necessarily have to be isolated to that. It certainly is, I think, what they had in mind in terms of picking an existing game, either a scratch it or a raffle ticket, which already exists and is easy to kind of isolate and market and highlight when it's a game on one of 6 machines and they have to find it. I can't be certain about what revenue it might generate. Those are really, we pick those games based on what sells in the marketplace, and they're available already because they're provided to casinos and other venues. So if they have a game portfolio that includes veteran-themed games, then it might be cost-effective to do that. If they were going to just create one for Oregon, the net proceeds, you know, it could significantly affect the net proceeds, quite frankly, if we had to do something just unique to us that doesn't already exist.
And, sure.
I don't mean to barrage you with questions. The fact is, it's just easier to pepper you with questions than, like, the earnest, passionate veterans who are up here. I feel kind of bad asking them, you know, kind of, so it's easier to be mean to you, I guess, is the... final question is kind of regarding expansion of games. I think what I meant with expansion is encouraging more people to play, and just kind of offhandedly, members of the committee and people who are testifying said, oh, I don't currently play lottery, but I'd buy these tickets. So the idea is this would be trying to get more people to play the lottery by kind of tugging on certain heartstrings, for lack of a better term. And so that's what I meant by expansion. I understand that, I mean, this doesn't require you to replace a game. The statute as written says you could create a whole new game. So in that sense, it could be an expansion. There's no requirement here that it replace something that exists. And then also the idea that it would be veteran themed, so it would be encouraging maybe people who don't play the lottery or haven't to come and play the lottery because it's going to develop and help veterans.
Yeah, Chair Matthews, Representative Fagan. You know, I did put a little bit in my testimony about the fact that if we did what the bill would require, it really wouldn't necessarily speak to adding a game, more games on, and it's just because we're trying to manage the profitability of the product so that we can, in fact, transfer funds, and we've seen this be a very mature product. The playership's relatively stable. I really don't believe that you would see a significant change in who plays from one game. That's a very mature product, and it's just for those who like to play it, and they pick different themes for whatever reason. I would be very surprised if it made any difference in who plays and how much they play. There may be some folks that are loyal to the cause that might, but it's not one of the products that we associate with problem gambling. It's not it doesn't have the sounds, the 3D effect, the immediate kind of reinforcing aspect that video games have, and so it's just a real low risk of any problem gambling issue.
And I appreciate you bringing that up, because that was one of my, I had written down addictive, because in past testimony that we've heard from you, because all the I guess The general consensus from the group has always been talking about either a raffle ticket or a scratch-it ticket. I mean, that's been the bulk of the discussion, so I think that we've kind of landed on that. And in fact, in the bill, in Section 4, it says, shall begin sales of tickets or shares for one or more games. So I think that we've kind of honed in a little bit. It still may be a little generic, but still honed in. But in past testimony, I do recall that you were talking about scratch-it tickets typically don't be, and lottery ticket or raffle tickets typically aren't addictive behavior. People buy one and they move on, and I think I've seen that with others. You know, I've had friends of mine that have bought the Thanksgiving lottery or raffle, you know, $20 ticket or $100 ticket, whatever it was, and they only buy one, and then they move on, they're onto their life, and they move out the door. Same thing with scratches. Rarely have I ever seen anybody standing over a counter scratch a ticket over you know, one after another. But I could see somebody compelled as they're paying for gas or buying milk, and they see the tickets and think, yeah, why not? It's kind of, you know, to me, it's similar to, and I get that it's lottery, and trust me, I'm not a gambler, and I don't want to promote it, but I'll do it for veterans. So I will tell you that when you're at that point of purchase sale, and I'm at the pet store buying dog food, and they say, would you like to give $2, you know, would you like to make a contribution to animal control? I'm not going to say no, you know. I mean, I'm in a dog store, for gosh sakes, I'm buying dog food. Sure, add $2 to the bill. I see this being the same. People will be compelled, but it might not be the same people that were worried about addictive gambling.
I agree, Chair Matthews. And the raffle game in particular is very self-limiting. We have up to 2 raffles per year. There are only so many tickets, and when they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
So there is no absolute guarantee that somebody with any kind of impulsive behaviors wouldn't necessarily buy more than they should, but that's we just certainly don't encourage that.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said something about staying at the counter and scratching the tickets, and it reminded me probably the best medicine to cure somebody, and no, you weren't there, I don't think, at the time, so no offense to anybody at the lottery, but the best cure I ever found for scratch-it tickets was as a member of the media and being involved with the annual media scratch-off for schools, and you get this role that's endless and you have a limited time and you're sweating using ice scrapers or anything to get those scratched off. It's a long time before you want to see another scratch it ticket after that.
Yeah. Hard way. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you again so much for coming forward and thank you for your testimony. I appreciate that. And with that, was there anybody else here to testify on House Bill 2086? I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2086.
Okay. I thought you were going to ask further comments from us, not necessarily the witnesses.
I can open it up.
I would appreciate it, sir.
I will reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2086.
What I would like us to think about as a committee is to put a sunset in this bill that if we, because I would like to pursue us to see about getting an allocation of funding through the lottery on a certain percentage through the taking out to a vote, and if that passes, then we terminate and sunset this bill, because then we're going to have a dual situation going on if we don't. So I would like to see us go ahead and pursue that, because there's no, I don't believe there is a sunset in this thing. It's just a start date. So I would like us to consider that, because if Representative Parrish gets this bill through and the people approve it, which I'm sure they will, then we don't need this part.
And your point's well made. I will just state that there's a great deal of anxiety in the building surrounding a 5% allocation that's automatic annually to our veterans. And not just to veterans, I should just say to any
million.
Cause.
Yeah.
And I think that you could run the risk of running a bill that would say, I want to dedicate X amount of percentage to K-12, and people would vote that as well. And so I think there's some reservation there. And again, I'm open to that discussion, and I've signed on to her bill. But I think that at 5%, you know, that's going to be tough, and we'll see. And so this is the point where you say, do you want to take small steps forward or a huge leap of faith for nothing? And I don't necessarily know what the answer is going to be on that. But as a committee, I think we could entertain that and have that discussion as we move forward. But I again appreciate your points. And to the committee, I appreciate everybody just, you know, lending their comments. I think the dialogue has been good. Because when you're talking about lottery, we have to face, too, that we've said it before. I think, Representative, you and I have both agreed, Oregon's addicted to the gambling. As a state, we're addicted to lottery funds. We're willing to do more for our veterans with it than we are for other things, but we're addicted. It's a noble cause. It's worthy, and I think we are going to be, we have an obligation, responsibility for our veterans to find ways to assist, and this is one before us, and again, with the public hearing, we'll be reviewing this again. Any further comments from the committee? I will then close the public hearing on House Bill 2086. And I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2160.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2160 would appropriate $1,101,334 from the general fund to the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs for the biennium beginning July 1st, 2013, to operate the Campus Veteran Service Officers Program. It declares an emergency and will be effective upon passage.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. I appreciate that. And first up, with House Bill 2160, if we can get Tom Mann, please, to come forward from the ODVA. And Tom, will you be alone or anybody joining you today? You're going to fly solo, huh? I saw Cameron and Paul up there. I saw Cameron and Paul, and I thought we need Tom, and then we got a dream team going. We'll just roll forward.
Are they still behind me? Am I covered? Is my six covered?
It is.
Always. Outstanding. For the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here to give you a little bit of background on House Bill 2160. You should have my written testimony. I want to just make some highlights from that. The idea of the Campus Veteran Service Officer came about during 2008 when Governor Kulongowski commissioned, through an executive order, the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services. The call of that task force was to go throughout the state of Oregon, determine what services for veterans were working, what services were not working, and where there were gaps. The task force did what I call the end of the world tour. We visited 24 communities in the state. We held town hall meetings in the afternoon with public officials and evening town hall meetings with anybody and everyone who wanted to come from the community. We learned a ton of things. We wrote a report in December of 2008 that had findings and recommendations. There were 39 recommendations made. One of the more disturbing things we learned as we went throughout this great state was the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans were not seeking their veteran benefits. It was very similar to the Vietnam generation. We lost the entire Vietnam generation because there were not services to provide them, and when they came home, we treated them very badly. The task force was very concerned about how we were going to go about finding the Iraq Afghanistan generation if they were not coming to their county veteran service offices. They were not coming to the federal VA, they were not coming to the State Department of Veterans Affairs. Task Force determined that they were going to be using this new thing called the post-9/11 GI Bill. They would be going back to school because the post-9/11 GI Bill would provide them not only the best educational funding, but a housing stipend. So as we scratched our head and thought, well, how do we get on campuses? The idea was to create a program to put veteran service officers accredited by the federal VA to do claims work and help with their federal VA benefits and other state benefits, put them on those campuses and track down these Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. The original bill, written by my good friend to my right, had 18 veteran service officers in it. It was fantastic. And everyone supported it. However, 18 veteran service officers in the fiscal that came out was a bridge too far. At the end of the day, the agreement was made that they could do it with 5 veteran service officers, and they would be regionalized. So what we did was we said what we would do is take a veteran service officer and house them at a university and have them circuit ride to the community colleges in their area of operations. The bill passed both chambers unanimously. However, Ways and Means was not in a position to fund the bill. So our department agreed that we would do a one biennium funding. And we told the legislature, let's see if this works. If we find veterans and we feel that this program works, we'll come back to you in the next session and then you can fund it with general fund. But if you decide as a legislative body that this program is not worthy or there's no money for it, we will not continue it. My manager of the program came and talked to this body in the interim on February 20th, 2013. Actually, it was February session, 2013. I'm sorry, actually, it was in the interim. And he gave you some numbers. We had dealt with 2,556 veterans on campus. It worked. We found them. Of those, a lot had already done their claims work, but we found 93 that had not done their claims work, and we were able to return to them $668,265 in disability benefits that continue monthly to this day. 555 students were signed up for VA health care who didn't know they had 5 free years of health care when they got out of their deployments. We found out that these students were having a hard time adjusting to education and the culture on campuses. If you've served in the military and you've been to college, you know those two cultures are very different. So our veteran service officers started doing seminars and in-services for the faculty and the administration about veteran culture and military life and what these students were going through. We also interviewed with students. The story I like to tell is we had a student go into the financial aid office at Monmouth at Western Oregon. He was having a bad day. He was struggling with his post-traumatic stress. And he didn't get the answer from financial aid he wanted. And he blew up. And he made some threatening comments. The financial aid office called campus security. Campus security called the Monmouth police. The Monmouth police called the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. My staff called me, and we called Gus Bedwell, who was the campus service officer, who found that veteran, intervened, got everyone together, de-escalated the situation, and made sure that kid was not kicked off campus, which is what everyone wanted to do to him because he was a crazy, violent veteran. The intervention we were able to do was probably better than anything else we did on the campus, is helping those veterans adjust to dealing with reintegration on a campus life. And there's more stories than that. So we came back to the legislature and said, we think it works. And not one person disagreed with that, at least in the body. The problem was funding. The bill was $1.1 million. And as you know, we've been in funding crisis for several biennium. And the decision was made that of all the worthy things there are to fund in this building, this one, just for $1.1 million, was a bridge too far. Just couldn't do it. So on June 30, 2011, we dismantled the program. We fired 5 veteran service officers who were on limited duration, and we discontinued our relationships with the universities and community colleges in terms of providing direct services to the campus. One university was really smart, though. Oregon State University stole one of my employees. We had Gus Bedwell as the regional guy for Benton County, and they liked what he was doing so much that they hired him away from me and made him their veteran representative. And Gus currently is at OSU being a rock star for the veterans there and making sure that they're getting everything they need and partnering with us and the county veteran service officer in Benton County. I understand from Joe Holliday who's here that Portland State University is about to do the same thing by having a vet rep. Now, they can't do claims work. But they certainly can do all the other things beyond claims work, including that important intervention piece. So when we saw this bill come up, we were very interested to find out one thing. If this is another, let's try this for 2 years, we're not very excited. It was very difficult to stand up the program. It takes me 6 months to train a veteran service officer and to get them accredited so they can go out in the field. When we first started that, we cannibalized our Portland and Salem offices and took accredited service officers out of their regular jobs and put them in the field and deployed them. That's how we got this program up and running so fast the first time. This time it's going to take me a while to get people trained up to do this. Further, we have relationships with the certifying officials, the college, the community colleges, and the universities. And believe it or not, it takes a little rapport building to make that work. And so if this is, let's just see if this works again, and it's a 2-year funding and we're not sure if we're going to be having stable funding, we're a little concerned about that because I would hate to see us start and stop and start and stop and build relationships and then go away and build relationships. There's no stability for the veterans. There's no stability for the universities, community colleges, and there's certainly no stability for our agency to do that. So I want to just put that on the table that as you're thinking about this bill, stability of funding is important for a program like this because it's not an easy program just to start up and pull down. With that, as you know, agencies are neutral on all bills. I would tell you that...
That's funny, Tom.
Got to get that, I think. Thanks, Tom. I would tell you that organizationally, our organization is set up very much like it was when we had this program. So if the legislature were to start this program back up, we would be in a situation organizationally to reestablish it. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you drive an automatic by chance, Mr. Mann, with park and drive and reverse and neutral? Just curious what it looks like. Thank you, sir, and appreciate your testimony. Mr. Evans, did you want to testify as well, Paul? Thank you.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee, I apologize. I marked the wrong slot. I'm very much in favor of this bill. I'm a public school kid. I do the best I can. I still live at 744 Main Street, East Monmouth, unless something happened in the last 20 minutes. So for the record, I'm still there. There's a couple of things I want to talk about, and I'll try to keep it relatively brief, which you all know for me that's difficult. The Campus Outreach Service Officer Program is one of those programs that I cannot tell you in words how important it is. I actually now, because of a number of factors, am trying to pay my bills by teaching at Western Oregon and at Chemeketa and Portland State in various classes. And I can tell you that the mood and environment on the campuses are different than they were when I went through. They're different than 10 years ago. They're different. There's more veterans. And generally, people are still relatively supportive. However, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are now page 19-20 news items. And people are beginning to forget. Americans are pretty good at doing that. I wear this silly-looking bracelet. I'm not a guy for jewelry, by the way, but I wear the silly little bracelet because there's still kids getting shot at. And I know. I didn't get elected in 06. I ran. I know the pressures you're going to get in the caucus. I know it. I know the interest groups from education and everywhere else are going to try to emphasize why money set aside for more veteran service officers or why money set aside from other revenue streams are a challenge. But I want to do two things in the time I have. Number one, I want us to count to 22. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Those are the ones we know about. Every day. Veterans that are so frustrated that they cannot figure out what else to do but to kill themselves. Now, the state of Oregon is not the United States government. The state of Oregon didn't declare war on Iraq, didn't declare war on Afghanistan. I get that. I get the state has lots of priorities. I get that too. But in 1844, when the Congress wasn't getting stuff done, people formed a provisional government because wolves were at the door. I'm telling you again, the wolves are at the door. Now, in your caucus, there are very few things that can, no kidding, deliver $1,000 for every dollar you put into something. The return on investment is clear, it's proven, it's demonstrable. Campus Veteran Service Officers, I asked for 18, I really wanted 29. I wanted one on every college campus, every community college campus, every university campus. Now, here's the opportunity, the serendipity opportunity you have this session. The governor and the advisors are trying to rewrite how we do post-secondary ed. You're doing community colleges, university system, access opportunities. They're looking at a new model. So let's actually focus on a new model that also takes into account language in the bills that have to do with campus veteran service officer programs. There's many different options for potential funding to help offset and help support this. But the bottom line is we got to start somewhere. And if 5 is where we're going to start, pray God we start and not stop it again. But there are few things in life that are good policy and good politics. And I don't care whether you have an R, a D, an I, a communist behind your name. I don't care. The fact of the matter is the feds right now are tied up. They're not able to provide some of the services that they need. And the one place we know we can make a real difference is on the campuses. Because what the campus service officers do isn't just file claims. It's also intervene. It's also make sure that the veterans and their families have access to all the other things that go along with the new GI Bill. For example, imagine a world if we had 29 campus veteran service officers. If we had a world where we had enough state veteran service officers that we could actually spend more time going into the prisons, finding the veterans that are there, and getting them signed up so that the monies come could help offset the health and human services that currently their dependents are currently requiring. Imagine if we actually had all 345,000 veterans in the system, counted for, and we had that federal funds coming, and imagine the opportunities that we could realize. I don't know, quite frankly, why 22 veterans are killing themselves every day. I do know it's a very different world here. I do know, as someone who is currently being treated through the VA system, that making sense of the way in which life is valued here is different than there. I can tell you after the last 5 years of struggling with a number of issues that you can never repay the debt to the guys that don't come home. So what I can also tell you is when it comes to this particular fight, for good or ill, I understand this building has something of a reputation as being challenging, I guess is the right word. This is one of those issues that we would go to war for. This is one of those issues that you're going to look back and say, you made a difference or we didn't get it done. And I know that there are folks on this particular bill concerned about monies going toward full-time people and other alternatives. But when I have a need to get a brain operation, I prefer a trained brain surgeon. I like volunteers helping. We can do more. We can have better outreach. But we need at least these five campus veteran service officers as a very basic foundation. Hopefully someday we can get more. But this is one of those things that we really need to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee members? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, really appreciate your advocacy and the fact that you take time out of your schedule and make it a priority to be here. Thank you very much. Just a comment. You may be pleased to know that I have chatted with the folks at Portland Community College, Rock Creek Campus.
Excellent.
And they are more than willing to engage in campus VSO activities at the highest level. Their advocacy is almost as strong as yours, maybe not quite as well informed, but they'd be great folks to check in
yes,
with.
Sir. I will. Thank you. And thank you for doing that.
Absolutely.
Anything else from the committee? Thank you both very much. Really appreciate it, as always. Next up, if you don't mind, we'll have, how about Joe Holliday, please? John Wyckoff and John Turner, please.
Good afternoon. Chair Matthews, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Holliday. I serve the Oregon University System as Assistant Vice Chancellor for Student Success Initiatives. Shall I speak, or did you want the others to introduce themselves as well?
You'll be fine to speak, and then they can introduce as they go. We'll hear from the panel first, then if you'll stay for questions, we'll see where we go.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I'm here to support House Bill 2160. This was an outstanding partnership between ODVA, the universities, and the community colleges, although I won't speak for the community colleges. They can do that for themselves. But we would look forward to reinvigorating this program. It was an outstanding partnership. We do have services and resources in place at some of the campuses. As Tom Mann mentioned, we have Gus Bedwell at Oregon State, and Portland State is right behind. But we would really benefit from having this program again. If I understand it correctly, there's going to be a significant number of veterans, and there's going to be a military drawdown, and I think we need every resource we can get to make this happen. I would also add that this program and the success of this program has allowed us to leverage federal financial aid, federal resources to help us stretch our state and institutional resources further in support of veterans. That's been a bonus. One thing I would also point out, the differences between our veteran certifying officers, which each campus has, and the campus VSOs, is that the VSOs are proactive, they're highly visible on campuses, and this is their job, whereas the certifying officers are usually staff members with many other responsibilities. So that we believe that's what makes the difference for this program. And I also know that it's highly consistent with President Obama's Principles of Excellence statement and the Department of Defense Memorandum of Understanding. In both cases, they require that we have a designated go-to person on each campus to serve veterans, and this is very consistent with that. It'll help us do that. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Really appreciate your voice on this issue. John?
Thank you, Representative Matthews and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the Legislative Director for the Oregon Community College Association, representing Oregon's 17 community colleges. And with me today is also John Turner, President of Blue Mountain Community College. We're just here also to speak in enthusiastic support for House Bill 2160. When this program existed, this was a great resource for all of our campuses. We had very good relationships with the VSOs, and they were able to connect our students to services and provide a lot of other really important functions. And you know, you've heard us in front of this committee before talk about how, especially for the smaller campuses, this is a great resource. And for our campuses that are stretched, you know, since the beginning of the recession, where we've seen our enrollment go up about 35% and our state funding go down about 20%, we are stretched thin. And providing students, whether they're veterans or non-veterans, resources and connections to resources, those are just areas where we're stretched very thinly. So this is a very good resource for us. I would echo something that I think you heard from ODVA, which is if something's worth doing, it's probably worth doing right. And if we're going to do this, this should be sustainable. When Tom was talking to me, the thing that occurred to me just about right before he said it was, it's the relationships that they build with the students and with the faculty and with the staff. And that takes time. And they're supposed to, I think, in a lot of ways, help the students navigate the different, you know, parts of the campus and the different parts of sort of the bureaucracy that is any campus. And that person has to know that. That person has to take the time to learn that. And to have that resource and then have it pulled away, I think, you know, is obviously not a good direction to go. So I think I would just echo that if this is worth doing, we ought to do it right. And with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague.
Thank you. And sir, great to see you again.
Good to see you too, sir. My name is John Turner. I'm the president of Blue Mountain Community College. I'm a veteran, and I like to think that I lead a college that's pro-veteran. And I really, my only value today is to echo and to verify from my perspective of seeing the Veterans Services Officer Program work on the ground that it's a great program. We had a gentleman named Martin Ornelas who was covered Eastern Oregon for us, and we only had him a few days a week, but he made a real difference when he was there. And he was missed when the funding dried up and Martin left us, and we're not serving veterans as well as we should. I'd like to find a way to have someone on my campus a few days a month, a week a month. Full-time would be great, but whatever we do, I would hope that we'd figure out a way to fund it on some sort of permanent basis. They're doing a great job. They're worth every nickel we pay for them, and I think that's all I really need to say.
Well, thank you, sir, and thanks for your service as well. We've told you that before, but we tell you again. Can't
thank
tell you enough. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't care who answers it, but what is it? I know that costs might differ among different schools, but what is the cost of having the Veterans Service Officer?
So, Chair Matthews, Representative Boone, members of the committee, are you asking about the cost to the university?
No, just how much does it cost? What's the budget for that? I assume that in some cases the university or community college might donate the space or equipment or something like that, but to have the person, the salary, whatever they need, to have that person in that position. I'm just curious as to how much money it is.
So what I would offer to do is find out, in the case of Oregon State University, exactly what that cost is. I don't want to guess for you. I can find out and get it back to you.
Okay, thanks.
And Representative Boone, I believe the allotment goes to the ODVA, and the program falls under them for the personnel. But you make a great point about what the school brings to the table in addition to the body itself. I think the allocation is, Ms. Edwards, $1.1
million? $1.1
million.
Per biennium,
yes.
Divided equally, so, or how that works.
Yeah, no, that's a great question about what the school, you know, gives. That'd be great. Thank you. Anybody else? Any further questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it. And if we could please bring up Veronica Garza, Daniel Wilson, and Stephanie Cornes, please. If I'm mispronouncing your name, I do apologize. If you assemble and choose your order and state for the record your names, and you can begin your testimony when you're ready. Want to bring up everybody? So are we joining Jeff DeMott and Eric Belt, too? Is that what we have?
Jeff DeMott.
Would the whole audience step forward, please?
We're going to need some wireless mics. All right. So thanks for being here, and in whatever order you prefer, and if you just state your name for the record and begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Matthews. My name is Veronica Garcia. I'm the Dean of Student Affairs at Portland Community College, and I am a mother of a veteran and a sister of a Marine, so I have veterans in my blood. We would like to thank you for the opportunity to come and present. PCC is very passionate about our veterans, as a representative had mentioned that they went to Rock Creek campus. Between the Rock Creek campus and the district office, we have made a concerted effort to really simplify our systems and our processes for our students so that veteran students could access higher education. Where we had difficulty, we've moved from 2 full-time staff to 4.5 full-time staff, and you actually have the bullets in writing of what I'm sort of going to cover. We have 2,000 veteran students, and we deliver about $6 million in subsidies and educational expenses through our certifying officials. PCC has made a concerted effort to make sure that we had plenty of staff to work with our veterans and get them through the educational process. Where we need help is really where the VSOs came in, and we really missed that piece. I still remember my VSO, David Cooley. He worked along with us whenever we had veterans with concerns that we needed outside resources, we could call. And as prior testimony stated, that the relationships were critical, those relationships that developed were critical for our students. We resolved a lot of issues through the VSO, who provided additional services for us, and they also connected our veterans with outside resources that they didn't know that they were aware of. So with that, I will let you speak to the people that work with the veterans on a day-to-day basis. We brought a team from Rock Creek, and we brought one of our certifying officials, so we'll move to Jeff.
Wonderful.
And then,
thank you, Ms. Garcia. You can pass Jeff it first. To whoever you'd like. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Matthews and the committee. My name, for the record, is Jeff DeMott, and I work for Portland Community College. I am a coordinator of financial aid in the Veterans Service Office, which provides educational benefits certification to the VA. So I did want to just bring a couple of points up. Our office has expanded, as Ms. Garcia mentioned, from 2 full-time staff to 4.5. Portland Community College has also created 2 veteran resource centers, which are devoted to the other needs outside of educational benefits, and those are staffed by 2 part-time staff members who are also veterans themselves. Through all those certifications, veterans do receive benefits in the form of either tuition dollars or housing allowance or stipend to the tune of $6 million a term. So it's a significant amount of money, it's a significant amount of assistance that we offer, and it's a complex thing that the office certifying does in certifying those benefits as they evolve and change. In addition to that, the students working with either the resource center or the certifying officials will come in, and we are oftentimes the first offices that a student veteran having any sort of issues would interact with and would present those needs to. So when we're working with those students, we make every effort to assist students as much as possible, including referring the student to any relevant agencies or resources that we are aware of. It's not uncommon, though, for staff to feel that they may not possess the depth of knowledge to have referred the student to take advantage of every benefit that student veteran was entitled to. And that is where a veteran service officer on campus would be able to help the veteran seek the immediate resolution or navigate the complex claims process to get the benefits they're entitled to and that can help them be successful as an individual, a student, and a veteran. Just to insert a short anecdotal story, we do just this week had a student leave class and come into our office where we do certifying of benefits, and he left class because he had checked his voicemail and found out that his housing was in extreme jeopardy, and he was not planning on returning to class because he needed to sort that out first. At that time, we referred him to all the services that we are aware of at Portland Community College, also some community resources that we know about because of our relationships with those organizations. But a VSO would have been a great person to maybe elaborate on what services are available and what resources that student can take advantage of. So PCC does support a student veterans club at each of its campuses and is working on improving veteran success by initiating different things like a college-wide task force made of faculty, staff, and students to address the needs of veterans. We are also working on veteran-specific orientation to help the student improve student experience. But these services could be extremely enhanced by the addition of resources to a campus VSO to more completely address the needs of student veterans. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Matthews, my name is, for the record, is Daniel Wilson. I also work at PCC. I'm the part-time temporary Veteran Resource Center coordinator that Jeff just referred to. I've been there since September. I'm also a veteran of the United States Coast Guard. I was born in Okinawa, Japan, Naha, lived on multiple military bases overseas, and ultimately spent 11 years in Guantanamo, where I graduated from high school along with nine other military dependents. Moved to America for the first time in 93 and joined the Coast Guard. Served 8 years, seven at sea, sometimes as much as 280 days a year. When I released from active duty in 2005, I wanted to go to college and pursue an education. So I attended a community college for 3 years. During that three-year period, I never saw a veteran service officer. There really were no services on campus. Although I had applied for VA health care, I never heard back from them at the federal level, and I never had health care. And ultimately, I ended up transferring to a university where I spent 3 years. And we had a very small community of veterans because it was a research university. There's about 105 of us when I first started there. And so there were very limited services for that community. There were more services for other communities by far than there were for us. So we decided we were going to start our own. We started our own program, and that's how I got into the work of working with veterans. I'm not a politician. I never will be. I'm a veteran, and I'm a public servant. That's what I do, and it's become a passion of mine. So I was really glad to come home to Oregon. This is my home state, and I enlisted out of Portland originally, and I was really grateful to see that Portland Community College, which is the largest institute of education in our state, and has approaching 2,000 known veterans, identified veterans across the district, is trying to deal with these issues. While the Veterans Educational Benefits folks over there are certifying a lot of people, they don't have the time and the staff to meet all the other needs. And that's what we try to do at the Resource Center. We try to pool together the community resources with nonprofit orgs, as well as with the city, things like the Portland City Parks Veteran Music Outreach Program, which is going on right now. These types of opportunities for veterans to get together and collaborate. When I graduated from university, I went to work for the VA in the HUD-VASH program as a case manager for homeless veterans. I did that for about a year. That was in 2011. I had been without health care since I left the military in 2005, mostly because I was working two jobs, going to school full-time, and had to live in my car during Christmas break because they throw everyone out of campus housing during that time. So there really wasn't a lot of time to be driving two counties over to the nearest VA hospital to yell and scream and jump up and down and pursue benefits that weren't available on my campus. I think this is an extraordinarily important thing for our veterans. We do a lot to provide resources. One of my advocates is going to speak to you in a moment about the resources we do provide. But when it comes to that area that's specific to the benefits that veterans have to file for, the best we can do is give them solid information and connect them to strong folks like Eric Belt over at the Washington County Veteran Services Officer, who works with us pretty heavily. And so I hope that you guys will consider this action.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, Mr. Wilson. And keep in mind, too, we weren't politicians either until we got elected. So thank you. I appreciate your voice on this.
Yes, Representative Matthews, members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Cornis. I am a full-time student at Portland Community College, as well as a veterans advocate that works in the Veterans Resource Center. I was in the United States Marine Corps for 8 years. During that time, I've been to 16 different countries. And finally just decided that I needed to come home and take a rest. So I was tired of living out of a duffel bag. Since my time at PCC, I launched my own benefits myself. I started all of my claims and everything before I got out of the Marine Corps, based on advice that I was given by veterans advocates that were in my family. Had I not known any of those resources, I would probably be still be waiting for my claim to be finished. I've only been out for about a year and 3 months. My claim was finished in 3 months. We have active duty members come in all the time who are coming off active duty, who are maybe home on leave, and they're looking at PCC, and they come into the Veterans Resource Center because they see the big sticker emblems, and they're like, hey, so is this like a recruiting station, or what is this? Like, well, there's coffee and tea and some cookies, and what do you need to know about your benefits? How can we help you? This is just a center where people come and hang out in between classes. And when I find out they're active duty, I give them all the same information that I had. And half of them look at me and they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this. Okay, write it all down for them. We have people who come out and they're like, well, I got out, I'm disabled, this is my disability percentage, I don't know what I'm supposed to do from here. And what Daniel and I have done is put together a packet of everything that they're entitled to based on what we know to be true of, okay, you are, you know, 30% disabled, so you can qualify for this and this and this, and here's the applications and how to get it. We aren't VSO officers. It's something that we know and we're able to help fellow veterans, but they are the ones with the expertise, and they're the ones that need to be there to help these people, because sometimes I may tell them to fill out a piece of an application incorrectly, and it comes back, and they're like, oh, you know, I think you told me to do this wrong. And I was like, you know what? I definitely did. I'm sorry. Like I said before, this isn't necessarily my job. It's what I want to go into, but we do what we can. PCC is probably the most veteran-friendly campus I've ever been on, as far as the deans of students and just most of the faculty in general. They're very sensitive to the fact that a lot of the veterans coming out right now have PTSD. And I think that they go out of their way to make the teachers aware of some of the stuff that they may show in a psychology class, like, we're going to watch today this effect, the effect this has had on veterans with PTSD, and here's this video that we're going to watch. I personally don't care to see it ever again. I will get up and leave. I'm not going to sit through it. I lived it. I don't need to be there. And the deans, luckily for us, stand behind us on that and say, you know, maybe you should provide these students with a different activity to do, maybe a different assignment, because this isn't something, we don't re-victimize victims. So I can't say that. I'm sorry, I wasn't really prepared for this today. This was just kind of thrown on me. So I would love to answer any questions that you guys have. I don't have a whole lot else to say.
Well, I appreciate you being here. And yeah, you don't have to apologize for anything. Doing great, great testimony. And thanks for your service. I really mean that. We like to hear from our veterans, and we like people to identify themselves as whether or not they are veterans. And sir, are you a veteran yourself?
I'm not.
Okay. And that's great, too. Well, thanks for the work you've done on behalf of our veterans. We appreciate it. Members of the committee, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that, and you may agree with me or disagree with me, I think that every veteran that comes out, or every soldier that comes out of a combat zone has PTSD, but it's different degrees.
I would definitely agree with you on that.
Because, boy, you're a different person when you come out of a combat zone. You're definitely different. So, because you said if they have PTSD, I think we all do if we've been in a combat zone. It's just a matter of how we control it and how we combat it, and more importantly, what degree we have.
Thank you, Representative. Vice Chair Parrish.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate you guys being out here, and I've got to, of course, give out my shout out to the PCC folks since they're here. But, you know, I just think, colleagues, this kind of goes back to the whole how do we draw down our federal money and fact that, you know, we're leaving $1 billion on the table that the feds don't bring back here, we don't get them back. This is such a great opportunity with these campus veteran service programs to bring them and get our veterans on a path, because part of that rehabilitation of coming back home and reintegrating is full employment. And that cohort that went to, you know, Iraq in 2010 is still about 18% to 20% unemployed. Mm-hmm. And that's 3 years later. And we just deployed troops today, which is one of the reasons I was late. So excuse me for being late. I just, again, this critical service, and we've got to find a way to get it done. Appreciate you guys being here.
Anything else from members of the committee? Seeing nothing else, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. And thanks all you're doing at PCC.
Thank you.
Have a great day. If we could please bring
Eric Belt.
Oh, we'll bring Eric Belt up. I called you and then you didn't show, and I was wondering what happened, but we just outgrew the panel, I understand. Feel free to state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Matthews, members of the committee. I am, for the record, Eric Belt. I am a County Veteran Service Officer for Washington County. I'm also the president of the Oregon County Veteran Service Officers Association as well. I absolutely support the this bill for campus veteran service officers. My concern as a campus veteran service officer, however, is the implementation of it, and I'll explain that. We have touched around the edges of how we fund veteran services within this state, and Representative Parrish has been mentioned several times. Probably when you were absent, you didn't know you were how we attach possibly your proposal at 5% for potential lottery if that ever goes forward. That's one aspect for how to address comprehensively how we deliver veteran services in this state. Student veterans are very much in need of the services that veteran service officers provide and the assistance and advice that we give them at the local level, both county as well as state. That being said, we also have a full range of veterans that are in need in this state. We have the homeless veterans. We have unemployed veterans. We have reintegration of the returning men and women from the service coming back from Afghanistan in an environment without a full active duty resources that are available, you know, to them. We have an older population. 20,000 folks are turning 65 every day in this country. We have our share of them, obviously, in Oregon. We have the justice-involved veterans, the incarcerated veterans that we get, and we need to intercept on the as they go into a facility and as they come out for reintegration, reentry within the community. So how do we address that great need within our state for the veterans that are returning and that are here trying to become members, productive members of the community? So far, at least at the local level, and I am a proponent of providing services at the lowest possible level within our community. Every county in this 34 out of 36 counties do have county veteran service officers in some capacity. Some counties only have a half-time employee providing. Columbia County, for instance, providing services to 6,700 veterans and their in addition to their family members. Half-time employee providing that service is not enough. We have not all counties provide funding directly as a county employee. We have contracts for veteran services to those individuals that provide those services. So the monies that come from the state to the counties, the E&E monies that originated in 2005, add up to about $3.5 million on a biennium basis. We're talking about $1.1 million here for student veterans. Chair Matthews, you made the comment earlier about one step forward, incremental steps to help individuals as necessary, and I fully support that and believe that student veterans are deserving of that outreach. We get a lot of referrals from Portland State, Portland Community College, excuse me, as Daniel Wilson mentioned, to our county veteran service officers. As a county veteran service officer, as the president of the County Veteran Service Officer Association, I really think that I am an advocate for the center of gravity within the local communities being a county veteran service office. We see folks and their family members on a daily basis to meet their needs, not only for filing claims with the federal VA, with first state benefits, but in a wide range of capacities for referral to community-based programs, and faith-based programs, trying to fit them into the housing services, whether that be locally in the local government or within the community-based organization such as Community Action to connect them. So not only do we provide that advice and assistance that Tom Mann spoke of, when you have that expertise as an accredited service officer, you have the ability to not only fit them into those specific programs that are dedicated for veterans, but any other area that can best serve their needs. So as you consider this bill, I would respectfully ask that you just consider that the overall funding, you know, impact for veteran services and how we do that long term, as we expect to see 30,000 additional veterans returning to the state of Oregon within the next 5 years. That we have a limited opportunity here over the next couple of years with the 41st pretty much turning the lights out in Afghanistan. After that, how much is the public really going to pay attention to the level of services that are being provided to veterans and their family members? And so I support the bill. I ask you to consider how it's implemented long-term, sustainably, at the local level as much as possible. And with that, I'll subject to your questions. I'm finished.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Thanks for being here and the work you're doing on behalf of the veterans. Committee members, anybody have any questions for Mr. Bell? Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much. Next up, we can please have Robert Thornhill and Marvin Rowe, please. Welcome back to your capital, and if you'll just start by identifying yourselves in whatever particular order you want to determine, state your name for the record, and you can begin.
Oh, okay. Hello, my name is Marvin Rao. I'm with the Oregon Citizens Lobby, chair and duly elected representatives. I'm here. I am an advocate of veterans. I'm a veteran. However, I'm not advocating for this piece of the veterans ODVA, and I'll explain why. On three occasions, I did informational interviews for these service positions. So I went down to nuts and bolts and basically talked to them about what the jobs required and what was going on. And each interview, I concluded, all three, with the stock question of what happened to the person that was previously in this position. And in all three cases, the individual had moved on to a different position with a different entity. For example, they mentioned Gus Bedwell earlier. I know him personally. And I know that he went over to the university, and some of them went to, like, counties and stuff. But the point is there was an investment made, they were trained, and then they moved on. More or less, it's being used as a stepping stone. Secondly, I think it shouldn't be refunded because it's been disbanded before. And just the principles of the group that I'm with are that we were looking for limited government, local control, and there's, like, county officers that do overlapping functions with this. And then at the university, you have people that are employed there that fill out forms and turn them in on behalf of the veterans. So I see a lot of overlapping. And then just last week, I was listening to the media, and I heard that there are 2 million federal employee jobs. And of those, the Veterans Administration, Veterans Affairs is the largest, with 300,000 people working for Veterans Affairs at the federal level. So it just seems like agency should be reduced, not increased. An agency, by employing these people in these positions, is not being reduced. It is being increased. They're training people to be experts, to control certain aspects of, you know, handle aspects of your life that they could be doing for themselves. Because we as Americans used to do more for ourselves. And as a veteran, I used my benefits. I didn't rely on the ODVA at all. I didn't need to. The system worked, and it still works. So just in conclusion, I think that $1.1 million of taxpayer money is, you know, I've done accounting. That's not big for some people compared to the debt we have, like $17 trillion nationally. We're in a crisis. But still, that is a lot of money for taxpayers because every little bit helps. And that's basically all I have to say.
Thank you. Mr. Thornhill, and we have your written testimony. It's on the OLIS site, so we won't need you to go through the 8 pages, but you can certainly brief us on what you feel.
I thought you'd go let me read all 8 pages.
No, sir, not today, but we certainly want to hear from you.
Well, would you let me read
this? Feel free, sir. You know how the committee works, and we, you know, we appreciate you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Robert Thornhill. I appear in opposition to House Bill 2160. I've submitted written testimony. However, with your permission, I'd like to read a summary of the testimony.
Absolutely, sir.
First, I draw your attention to President Obama's Executive Order 13670, April 2012, which prescribes principles of excellence for educational institutions serving service members, veterans, spouses, and other family members. On the principle of know before you owe, these principles of excellence require education institutions to provide the entering veteran students, among other info, exact details about education benefits available, how to go about receiving them. It lays it out by the numbers, in detail from the beginning to the completion, to include disability counseling to a subsequent job search. I gave you details on that. Nine Oregon universities and community colleges are now implementing or have already implemented those principles. These make, in my view, completely and totally redundant campus veteran service officers. I understand that the remaining Oregon universities are in the process and will soon be implementing those principles. ODVA initially touted the CVSO program as necessary to ensure that veterans realized education benefits from the new post-9/11 GI Bill. That bill went into effect in August 2009. All reports are that it went smoothly, except for the slow processing of claims of VA. And there's not one bit of evidence that even one Oregon veteran did not receive his or her due, though we have not had veterans, campus veteran service officers in a long while. Then OVDA reported, quote, "We're helping hundreds of veterans receive both education benefits and other VA benefits, such as health care and disability compensation, by going to the campuses where they are. We make it easy for veterans to receive the benefits they have heard." But by their own reports, there's not very many on campus, very small number. But in any event, they characterize the CVSO program as a convenience, make it easy for the veterans to claim. A convenience, in my view, which cannot be afforded in these days of zero budgeting. Under Oregon's Freedom of Information Program, I asked ODVA for copies of the material showing they had helped hundreds. What ODVA presented me in response indicated they had helped far fewer than hundreds, as they asserted, maybe only a dozen or so. The need for CVSOs related to education benefits is eliminated by the principles of excellence. That leaves non-education benefits to be covered. As is shown in my written testimony, there are scores of VSO type help developed throughout or dispersed throughout Oregon. This is in addition to the many websites designed specifically to help the veterans before their discharge, after their discharge, and continuing. Finally, there's an excellent ODVA magazine. Covers all kind of benefits. When combined with the VA publication of the same, gets it. All the information one really needs to understand what benefits are available and how to go about complaining. The program of convenience, this campus veteran service outfit, is a program that can't afford. Money's needed elsewhere. Thank you for hearing me out again. I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Thank you both. And I do believe we're going to have questions. If you don't mind, if you'll just stay seated for just a moment. I believe what I'd like to do, our vice chair has an engagement she has to get to with constituents. I'd like to just briefly close the public hearing. So I'm going to close this public hearing on House Bill 2160. And committee members, I'm going to open a work session, and please stay seated. This will just take a moment. Open a work session on House Bill 2417.
Briefly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2417, as we've heard before, increases recording and filing fees collected by the county clerk and deposits those fees in the county assessment and taxation fund, an increase of $5 from $15 to $20. It goes into an emergency housing account, a home ownership assistance account, and a general housing account, all to benefit our veterans.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. And Vice Chair Fagan.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2417 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Human Services and Housing and then to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Fagan moves House Bill 2417 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that be referred to the Committee on Human Services and Housing and then the Committee Ways and Means by prior reference. And is there discussion? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did some work with the people involved in this to see one. Remember, I asked about administration percentages. Administration on this is 6.9%, which is a little high, in my opinion, but it does come into the 5 to 7% curriculum that we request. But I still think it's a little high, and it could go over that if we're not careful. I just wanted to be sure that this money does, in fact, go to the proper ends because it needs to be put where we're designating it. I don't want to build a bureaucracy. I don't want to build something up. I want the homeless veterans to get something out of this.
I understand, Representative. And this does have, again, once it comes out of this committee, a couple of other stops, in fact, three other stops prior to coming to the floor. So it's got a ways to go. Any other committee members? Any other discussion? Yes, Representative.
Well, maybe I just heard it wrong, but it sounded like the motion was to go to the floor and then re-refer it from the floor to the Housing and Human Services, and then Ways and Means.
Apologies. It's a do-pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred.
Okay, got it.
Any other discussion? Seeing no other discussions, clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative
Huffman? Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perry?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. And the motion passes. Thank you very much. And with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2417 and open a work session on House Bill 2421. Vice Chair, Ms. Edwards, did you want to?
Just briefly, House Bill 2421 has been termed the No Wrong Door Bill, and it's between the ODBA and the Oregon Department of Transportation. There is no revenue impact statement, and there is a fiscal impact statement issued.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Parrish.
Chair Matthews, I move HB 2421 as amended with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Parrish moves House Bill 2421 as amended with a do-pass recommendation. The bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. The motion passes. The bill will be sent to a Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, and I will once again reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2160. And we are in a public hearing on House Bill 2160, and committee members received testimony. Does anybody have any questions of this panel? Any questions of the panel? Thank you, gentlemen, both for your input. We appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
Good
for
to
your
see
service.
You. Hear me out, yeah. Thank you so much. And thanks for your service, sir, and thanks for being a veteran and helping. And you too, Mr. Thornhill, as well. Thanks
been
for your
well
service.
Well rewarded for my services.
Thank you very much.
Besides that, it was my simple duty.
Thank you, sir. And with that, I will continue. We're still in public hearing on House Bill 2160, and if we could please have Ed Johnston. And, sir, I understand you have testimony you'd like to lend in on two of these bills. So what we're going to do is we'll hear from you on House Bill 2160.
Okay.
Then we'll have to close that public hearing,
right.
Open another public hearing, and that'll be it for the day. So keep in mind, too, we are really close to the edge of the day, and
no
I apologize
problem.
For rushing.
I don't have a lot of time anyway. I just got out of the hospital with a heart attack, so I'm not
well,
worried.
And you're alive and kicking and walking. Feel free to state your name for the record.
I am the president of Elected and Public Employees Oversight Committees. We educate the public on the racketeering, fraud, and extortion of our public employees and educating people how to file on them. I'm against this bill. We've got enough structured out with the veterans. I don't understand how come we're not educating them on their UCC filings and their strawman account, getting them off the system. We have all this under House Resolution 192 and the Banking Act of 1933. We have solutions to the problem. Like one of the recommendations I did for the lottery funds is 25% of all the lottery funds, and I'll email you guys all my bill again that I put out last year and 07 for 25% of lottery funds going to retirement fund for legal Oregonians only, because only legal Americans have any rights in this country. And this is a frustration. We don't educate ourselves in that, and including the vets get short on this because they are legal Americans and they have more rights than any illegal in this country that comes to this country. And they should not be degraded and slandered for them standing up for our country and having the illegals having more rights than they do when they're the ones putting up their own lives for our defense.
Mr. Johnston? So, I'd like you to keep your comments to germane. We did,
right.
Make some exceptions for you today, so please keep germane
to the
bill.
No, I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Just getting ready to end, Chair. I'm not going to take up that much time. But, I mean, it's just one thing that we need to look at these things, because it's like our police departments and code enforcers actually have no legal authority in the state of Oregon. Their job technically is to, by law, is to patrol the public employees, not the public. And those cases are being provided in the Capitol, and there is a new case out, too, the Fourth Amendment administrative ruling that says all your seats by federal law is 12-12-12 is
Mr.
vacated.
Chair, could you redirect the testimony again? Thank you.
I will give you one last warning, then we will gavel out of this committee,
yeah,
sir.
I'm getting ready to...
please finish your testimony for House Bill 2160.
Right.
Keep it germane to the subject, please.
I am. So, yeah, I'm against that bill, and so we need to look at other options in that and educate our veterans on their UCC-1 filings, and I think that would be the better option.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Johnson.
You.
We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2160. We appreciate that. And committee, is there anything else for the good of the order? Because I don't believe we'll call up any more testimony on House Bill 2068 or 86. He has left the building. Any other comments? No comments, seeing none. The committee will be adjourned. Thank you all for your commitment to the committee and to our veterans. Thank you.